The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google. What makes them industry giants? Get ready to take a peek inside and learn their secrets of success. This is Silicon Valley Insider, the show that demystifies the Valley and helps to elevate your business to the next level. Now, your host for Silicon Valley Insider, Keith Koo.
Welcome to Silicon Valley Insider. I'm your host, Keith Koo. On today's show, I'll be reporting back from a conference, Blockchain Bridge. It was all about enterprise uses of the blockchain, and I got to catch up with my friends David Moss, who's the CEO of Strongblock, and David Nage, who is a partner at Arca and has his own podcast called Baselayer. So don't go away. So in tech news this week, I want to talk about two things. One is that Union City, which is right next to Fremont here in Silicon Valley, they got hacked and all the systems are down. And we've done a lot of shows on ransomware, malware. It's not clear yet what's exactly happened in Union City because they're still in remediation. But the whole city is shut down right now. You can't have permits. You can't have licenses. And so we'll keep on top of that. Also, in what is not a surprise, Adam Neumann, the CEO of WeWork, has stepped down and is going to be a non-executive chairman of the board. WeWork has been in a lot of news lately because of their failed IPO and people questioning their business model. WeWork is the co-working giant that was valued at one point at over $45 billion and has a large investment by SoftBank. So they've pulled their IPO. It's yet to be seen what's going to happen next. And that's the tech news of the week. I am joined with a very special guest and friend, David Moss, who is the CEO of Strongblock. Welcome, David.
Hey, Keith.
But to really talk about David, I need to put in the time machine and go back to June of 2018 last year, which is the last time I saw David face-to-face. And at my Tulip Conference 1.0, David and Thomas Cox, and we'll get into why in a second, they were on stage with me, and we were talking about a blockchain that was emerging called EOSIO, all the rage, really big ICO, global news. And it just turns out that at Tulip Conference, it had not yet been voted by the community to launch. And that was kind of the cliffhanger. And as the conference died down, David and Thomas went upstairs at our conference center, hosted, was it 300 participants, David?
Yeah.
To unanimously launch, the vote to launch the EOS mainnet, and within a week, the network launched, and I wanted to catch up with David of that was certainly a rush, and what's it been like since?
Well, thanks, Keith. When we were doing the launch, it was very interesting being at the Tulip Conference because both Thomas and I were on panels with you and also did keynotes there. But in the background, we were also talking with all the various groups, and there were three different groups who had all for different reasons, decided that they would not give a go vote to launch the EOS mainnet. And so we were, in between speaking and being on stage, we were talking with them privately and working on just lobbying them to find out what are your objections to having this vote happen. And so it was really, it was a huge rush that night to go, and I think it was about 7 in the evening, something yeah. like that. We had all these people on there, and we said, okay, well, let's go for a vote. We've been going through this for weeks trying to get people to do it. And I was actually amazed because everybody said yes, and there was just the people were screaming and shouting and celebrating, and it was just a big rush. And this is a really cool occasion because these are people from all over the world, block producers, hundreds of block producers, candidates who wanted to be a part of it. And they all got to participate in this global community that was brought about by somebody creating an open source software package that I was the head of development for.
Yeah, it is an amazing story. So David was the head of development for Block One, and Thomas was the head of governance for Block One, and both these gentlemen in their own right are very well known, doing keynotes all around the world. Going back to that exact moment in time when the vote was taking place, and I'm sure if people Google it, they'll see like Brady Bunch's 9 boxes. This was like a 100-box video chat. We were hosting the Tulip Conference. There were 17 block producer candidates living in a single house. And I'd like to think that sharing a house for the entire week might have had something a little bit to do with the actual lobbying, just like government lobbying that was going on.
This is great. I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
I didn't know they were all sharing. That's amazing. That's an amazing fact. I just saw them all on video, the big global family. I thought everybody was like dispersed. Well, they were dispersed globally, okay. Keith. I mean, some people, all the Tulip block producers were in a house, and a lot of those people became top 21 block producers, at least at the start.
Right. And we'll get into that. But yes, we paid for a house because it was international. And remember, if you think about the kind of bohemian lifestyle, it hadn't launched yet. People had put a lot of their time, effort, and their own personal money into it. So,
indeed,
I sponsored a house to host block producers, and it ended up that 17 of them were living in the same house all week. That was great. The house was in this, I forget if it was the Richmond or Sunset District, but it was a really nice Airbnb. It was not like some podunk thing. It was a really nice San Francisco house.
It was an Air C&B, an Air Castle and Breakfast. It sounds like you literally got in a castle.
Well, it wasn't Crypto Castle, but it was nice.
That's beautiful. Have you shared this with on the radio before?
Nope, this is the first time.
This is real. I'm so glad that you decided to share this with me. I didn't know that. So in the middle of us doing all of this, there was an extraordinary amount of excitement, and everybody just wanted to see it launched. And so when we got that yes vote, that was huge. And then we had to go do the mechanics, right? We had to select an anonymous or basically the founding block producer that sets everything up. Again, this is on the technical side.
Yeah, that's fine.
Somebody who's just going to set it up, get everything ready, and then have everybody else kind of come in and start joining. And so I also had the honor of, again, I selected them, but we did it through a random process to be able to select people from a pool. And I was also the person who communicated with that, with the original anonymous block producer that started the EOS mainnet. And that name still has not been disclosed, and nor will I disclose it, but I did get to meet that person in person over this last year.
Oh, wow. I thought there were names written on the Genesis block.
There were names written on the Genesis block, but it doesn't say specifically who it was who was the anonymous block producer.
I got it.
And it was actually a bunch of people. No matter who we selected, we knew that there was going to be a team of about 12 people that were all going to cooperate. So then fast forward, once that was done, then the whole idea was to have an EOS mainnet, an actual blockchain mainnet. Now, that really wasn't what my intention was, nor was it the intention of Dan Larimer or Block One. What we were looking for was we built EOSIO as MIT open source software as a blockchain operating system. The EOS mainnet, which I also first helped build the EOSIO software, launched the EOS mainnet with the EOS token. But the goal was to release it as MIT open source and then build on it. We never envisioned. Dan and I were kind of talking with each other when this was going live, and we didn't understand why people weren't coming up with 100 different blockchains or 1,000, just one. And so we felt that one blockchain, to a certain extent, it's kind of one size fits all, right? You know, it says everybody go to one place on the internet. Well, they do go to Facebook and Instagram and a handful of places now. So we were looking at it from the perspective of this is like Linux and we want to be Red Hat, or this is like, you know, the internet, we want to be WordPress, or this is like the internet, we want to be Dropbox. And so that was what we decided we were going to do with Strongblock. Strongblock was going to provide that layer to allow people to build on.
I'm going to pause right there because I want to talk about strong block.
Yeah.
So, but it was great reminiscing with you, David. So once again, I have David Moss, who's the CEO of Strong Block and the former head of development for EOS.io for Block One. Any questions or comments, email us at info@svn.biz, and we'll be right back. The NTT Open Innovation Contest 10.0 is now open for submissions. Interested startups should definitely check this out. Your company could win up to $100,000 of funding and win a trip to Tokyo to get shepherded by NTT Data's ecosystem. Go to oi.nttdata.com or svn.biz for more information.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your host, Keith Koo.
Hey, insiders, welcome back to the show. Once again, I'm joined with David Moss, who is the CEO of Strong Block and the former head of development for Block One. Welcome back, David.
Hey.
So, David, when we ran out of time in our first segment, we were just about to get into the segue into your new project, Strong Block. Let's talk about that.
Well, after we finished up doing the launch, I went back to my hotel room, hadn't eaten all day, collapsed, and then started thinking, what are we going to do? I'd already left Block One right before this. My goal was to work in development internally at Block One and then be part of the launch, because you could. Block One has a policy not to work with block producers. They wanted to keep arm's length,
sure,
so they wouldn't control the network. And so I was the only person who was involved in both the development of and the launch of the EOS mainnet. I hold that interesting distinction. We had been planning a blockchain company, and we were trying to figure out what to do. We were strongly encouraged by a lot of the people out there, including Block One, to be kind of consensus for EOS. My experience as a consultant told me that, well, there's a problem with that, is that the consulting part of it really, you know, takes a lot of, you're always wishing that you would have built a product. And what we felt was missing was the idea of a, like I said, a Red Hat for blockchain, or a WordPress for blockchain, or a Dropbox for blockchain, or for EOS. Our goal was to come up with something along those lines, productize that, have it so it's all orchestrated, make it super easy. And so that was when Strongblock was formed, literally right, I guess it was just a couple weeks later, right at the end of June. So July 1st, 2018, we formed Strongblock, and it was myself. A bunch of us got to leave Block One. This was part of our terms of doing this, is that it was myself, Thomas Cox, Corey Lederer, Brian Abramson were all employees number 2, 3, 4, and 5 for Block One LLC,
right,
which was the development arm of Block One. And so we were all able to leave. And start our own company. And so that's what we've been working on over the last year, and we've gone through a number of different iterations where each time we thought we made it easier to be able to get your blockchain set up and be able to have a marketplace, we would take it to people and they would say, yeah, it's not as easy as you think. And so my goal was to make it really super easy, because we saw the hundreds of enterprises that we were talking with struggling with getting just a simple pilot launched. They couldn't find the resources. They didn't understand blockchain. It took forever to get things set up, and then it didn't scale. So we solved all those problems. But it took us a while to figure out how to do that, and also how to get the price down, because one of the big things that you probably are aware of with all the block producers that were out there, the 300-plus, some of them invested $500,000 to $1 million in hardware to be able to get things set up. And it was kind of heartbreaking when some of them weren't able to be in the top 21 or even the top 50 to make any money. And now, recently, a number of the ones that were at the Tulip Conference, all the 17 block.
Oh, I'm an advisor to ES42, which was consistently in the top 10 until recently.
Yeah, and so now they've all been replaced by voting wise by by Chinese token holders. Our goal was, well, all these people have provide an extraordinary dedication to EOS as an operating system and as a and the whole idea was, could we make a world in which they would be able to continue having businesses? And so that's the whole idea of strong block and the strong block marketplace is allow people to easily create their own. Right now, it's an EOSIO blockchain, but we're blockchain agnostic. Very, very rapidly do that. Then and it will scale later on, right? EOS goes, it actually does scale instead of doing it on Ethereum. Then when you're done, you can go to the marketplace, find block producers, find dApp developers, find dApps, find things you can download them, put them on your blockchain right then and get it running. And literally in minutes, now you can do the things that you need to do. There's a latent, we feel that there's a latent need for this marketplace, the marketplace of people who need blockchains built and people who can build blockchains. There's no place for them to get together. That's what we're providing with a platform for them to easily build on. So we want to open that up to the community, and we have already 30 of those original teams that we worked with are already our partners, and they're going to be in our marketplace. So we're looking forward to just opening that up to the community so that everybody can get a piece of that pie that right now seems to have been kind of pretty much selfishly taken by just the token holders and Block One.
Yeah, that was a good summary of what happened since the mainnet launch. And again, kind of the first foray into delegated proof of stake. Great intention, a lot of heart and soul put into that. But in terms of can't fight human nature.
Yeah, well, it ends up becoming, we had kind of predicted a race to the bottom. At least Thomas and I had that people were going to end up just figuring out, well, how do we buy votes? How do we, you know, get it so that we can have our friends who are block producers? We were aware of a number of campaigns that were already going on where people had figured out how to bypass the Constitution and everything else to be able to vote the block producers in that would allow them to get money. Then they would give them a 20 or 30% kickback to do that. So we knew that stuff was going to happen. But EOSIO is software. Well, let's see. There's governance, and it's configurable governance. Smart contracts are written in a regular programming language, C++. It's benchmarked right now at 4,000 transactions a second. Accounts are recoverable. It has an account hierarchy system. It has delegated proof of stake, so there's a nice decentralized component that you can put into it. It has everything that you need. It's just right now, here we are, you know, over a year later, and every enterprise I go into, they say this like a brand name thing. It's like if you're trying to sell Ford or Chevy or Toyota or something like that, and you come in, my car name, it's called a Moss. I want you to buy a Moss car because it's this really cool car, and everybody should have a Moss car. It's like, well, do you compete? Well, we used to work for this company called GM, but now this is the Moss car, and nobody's going to buy your car. And this is the problem, is that the name brand recognition out there is for Ethereum, and Ethereum, we'll figure out if your audience is okay with this. Ethereum and Consensus and Ethereum Enterprise Alliance kind of peed in the pool. They went out there and they said, we've got this incredible blockchain, and we can get it out there, and you can use it for all these things, and it'll scale one day, we promise. Yeah. So they got everybody excited, and everybody, lots and lots of companies that we're talking with have already built on Ethereum, and it failed. It couldn't scale. And so this got a lot of people disillusioned. We believe that is going to start changing. Gartner Group believes that's going to start changing. But when you've got so many people that were sold Ethereum and then Ethereum didn't scale, you got a problem.
The problem that Dave and I were discussing was really about how Bitcoin was blockchain 1.0 in a sense. Ethereum was really blockchain 2.0. It was a platform, and it proved out a lot of use cases. It was really good for showing that blockchain could be beyond a cryptocurrency, it could be used for utility and you can build applications on it. But inherently, both Bitcoin and Ethereum are very slow regarding transaction speed. That's okay if your application doesn't require a high-speed transaction. But once you hit that limit, that's where all the craziness occurred a couple years back as the cryptocurrency aspects of these blockchains scaled. It became too expensive to use and too slow to use. So instead, David and team, in building out EOS as a platform, they had scalability in mind, and really with the whole intent that both corporations and individuals and people as part of the ecosystem could adopt a high-speed transaction network. And there's other blockchains being built with those principles as well. So I wanted to thank David again for this segment, and he will be in our next segment as well to keep going on what he's doing with StrongBlock. If you have any questions or comments on today's show, email us at info@svn.biz. Always come to our website, svn.biz, to check out what the latest going on in our events and our upcoming speakers, and we'll be right back. The NTT Open Innovation Contest 10.0 is now open for submissions. Interested startups should definitely check this out. Your company could win up to $100,000 of funding and win a trip to Tokyo to get shepherded by NTT Data's ecosystem. Go to oi.nttdata.com or svn.biz for more information.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your host, Keith Koo.
Welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider. I'm your host, Keith Koo. On today's show, I've been talking about the recent Blockchain Bridge Enterprise Blockchain Conference. I've been catching up with my friend, David Moss, who's also the CEO of StrongBlock and former head of development for Block One. For today's cyber tip, I really want to give an extreme word of caution to anyone in the military or soon to leave the military. There's a new hack which is offering soon-to-be military veterans the opportunity to download an application, and that's all in the guise of helping you find jobs after you leave the service. That sounds great, except that it's going to most likely infect malware on your machine, and once that malware is on your machine, it's going to be able to collect all the information about you, about how your machine's configured, about any account you're using on that machine. And so just an extra word of caution that to always know exactly what you're downloading and who you're getting it from, and be vigilant. And that's the cyber tip of the week. Welcome back to the show. Once again, I'm joined with David Moss, who's the founder and CEO of StrongBlock, whose tagline is Blockchains Anywhere, and was formerly head of development for Block One, who released the EOS IO software. Welcome back, David.
Hey, Keith.
So in our last segment, David, we were just getting into the underpinnings of blockchain, what StrongBlock's all about in the tagline, Blockchains Anywhere. Let's pick up back from that. And just before we did that, we were talking about the efficiency of using the MIT open source contract versus the GPL. So let's pick that back up and then keep going.
All right. Well, so when Dan Larimer originally had the vision to publish this as open source software under the MIT open source license, that is a great license to have because there are almost no restrictions. You don't have to actually take what you've built and publish it back and make it open source for everybody else. Red Hat, for example, had some restrictions under GPL, yet they built a business that they sold to IBM last year for, what, $34 billion?
Yes.
And all they were doing was not... They called it, a lot of people thought that Red Hat sold a break-fix model. In other words, we'll come in and fix things when there is a problem. That was the opposite of Red Hat's model. Red Hat's model was, let's make really great, easy-to-use software that doesn't break very often so that you can buy it with confidence and install it in enterprises. That was their model. That was what they're shooting for. And so we're following something similar using that MIT open source license. We can actually generate right now EOSIO blockchains. There'll be other blockchains later on, but the idea behind that and using open source is that there's a huge group of people that are continually contributing to that open source code, including Block One. They have new things that are making it go faster than 4,000 transactions a second, adding new features on, and we get to be the beneficiaries of that and also contribute to it. A number of people on our team contributed to the original, still have contributions in there for the original project. But you also then get to have that community that's building on the open source stuff. Now, the problem was, well, why would you need Red Hat if Linux is out there and it's an open source foundation? It's like, well, because enterprises didn't trust that a bunch of people working in their basements at, you know, 2 in the morning were going to be able to keep their enterprises running. They wanted to know that somebody had taken the time to add security and all the other things onto it. That's what we've done for EOSIO. We've just basically taken that at StrongBlock. We have taken that for EOSIO and other blockchains in the future to allow you to be able to create a working blockchain that you know that you can scale. It's not a break-fix model. We don't want to be your consultants to come in and fix your blockchain. We're delivering an extremely easy-to-use blockchain that has all the EOSIO or other blockchain features. You can have it up and running in a couple of minutes, and then you can go to the marketplace, find what you need to be able to have there. And so what we've done, and this is something that we talked about earlier today, you know, we're at a conference right. today, and at the conference, we were talking about adoption and about enterprises using this stuff. We've talked with, at Strongblock alone, over almost 100 enterprises. I think it's 85, 86. And we're talking with all of them in fast-moving consumer goods. That's like beverages and things. Consumer goods, luxury goods, retail, supply chain, transportation. Let's see, what are some of the other ones? Certificates, steel, oil and gas, energy. All of these groups, we're advising them and letting them know, and we're getting input from them. They've been working with on our alpha platform, and we've been working with them on a non-paid basis so that we can make sure that we understand what enterprises are really looking for. Mm-hmm. So when we launch on October 1st, which is coming up pretty quick here, then all of the lessons that we've learned are going to be there, as well as the cost lessons. We realized that people didn't want to have to pay money up front to get started on this. So we actually figured out, I know that the block, we were talking about block producers putting in $500,000 to $1 million. We actually have a model right now that allows people to create a blockchain and have all the features of that blockchain. Let's say EOSIO is our main example. That's where we came from. And our cost to add another group that wants to have one of those blockchains, if we have another 1,000 of them, our cost is minimal. Not $500,000, not almost no cost at all. But that's what took us a good portion of the time to do, is bringing it for free with all the functionality and fast so that businesses can focus on business.
Coach David, so I commend you and the team for thinking of it. As I advise and consult, not blockchain companies, but other companies, drones as a service companies, we're adopting a very similar approach. It's very efficient. It proves to the customer base, especially enterprise customers, that you have skin in the game. And I think it makes all the sense in the world. And I do want to say, you know, one thing about what you're doing, because you're talking about lots of car analogies. Because you're talking about a Moss car versus a GM car. I would say it differently. If you, and I did the same thing, I did an analogy last year on stage with you and Thomas about your approach to building EOSIO. If Henry Ford can build your car for you cheaper and better than he did for himself, that's really the opportunity here, because it's not something that I need to give an endorsement to. Your team built this general purpose blockchain that scales and has lots of great features built into it. And that was like a 1.0 product for ESIO. If you can, and one thing I speak about often in explaining blockchain to people, especially enterprise folks, is that it's really parallel universes. And so the ability to create based on open source software, because let's be honest, I could clone open source anytime I wanted to. This is the thing that people blow their mind. People don't understand that they can clone open source software, but you can't clone the community or the experience.
Nope.
And that's what makes it a parallel universe.
Well, I love what you said. That was very well put, is that when you're talking about Henry Ford, he came up with a way to build cars cheaper than he could build them for himself. We've done that. I love that. I'm going to have to use that, Keith. Thank you. But we've come up with a way to build blockchains cheaper than we originally built them for ourselves, because we're pretty sure when the 21 block producers that went live for the US mainnet, we're pretty sure that there is like $10+ million worth of hardware and equipment in
least. I was helping a lot of them with the configuration and actually getting quotes on what the hardware and software cost would be.
Okay, well, so now the question is, if it's free, what can you do as opposed to having to buy in? You don't have to, again, on our software, it's all to get started, everything is free. The marketplace is there. You've got dApps that you can download and put on your blockchain and everything that you can do. But the idea is we want adoption. This is my, I guess, the gift that we're trying to give here, is that we're trying to make sure that blockchain isn't a rounding error. It isn't something something like string theory or other, something else for physics that never gets adopted because everybody's so much interested in hyping it and talking about how great it is. We're just interested in seeing people try blockchain. A lot of people got burnt by trying Ethereum and trying Hyperledger. And again, beautiful things. We wouldn't be here if Ethereum and Bitcoin didn't exist before this, but EOSIO is a third generation blockchain right. operating system. There'll be more. There'll be newer versions of that. There'll be other blockchain operating systems. But now, once we've leveled the playing field, this is what happened with MP3s, right? This is what happened with recording studios. There was a time when every recording studio on the planet that you went to, you'd have to invest $10 million into hardware and outboard gear and all sorts of other stuff. Now you can get a MacBook laptop with Logic Reason or Pro Tools and a couple of microphones with microphone adapters. And for, $2,000, you have your own recording studio. And people have done that. And they actually have hit records with those things now. We're looking at doing that same kind of revolution that WordPress did, that Red Hat did, that the low-cost recording tools did, any of those kind of innovations. That's what we're looking at doing, is making this so that everybody who wants to use it can use it. People famously said, why would you need your own website? Nobody's going to have a website. Bill Gates, when he was hiring Steve Ballmer, he said to Ballmer, my goal is that everybody in the world have their own PC. And Ballmer laughed, is my understanding.
Well, Bill also said that he didn't see why anyone would ever need more than 1 megabyte of memory.
Yes. Well, there's foresight. There's not quite getting it. But, again, not being able to extrapolate, like, Moore's Law, how much those things would increase, how much the capacity would increase. But that's the whole idea, is we don't know at Strongblock what the big innovation is going to be. Somebody may come along and say, now that blockchain is free for me to get started with, to build out my prototype, I can do that here, and I'm now going to come up with this new thing. Maybe it's for charities, or maybe it's something for, we've talked a lot about this, about consumer advocacy, where people are reporting things in, but they're reporting from the scene, or digital advocacy, or photographs that are the original photographs. We don't even know, and this is exactly the idea. It's like, we don't know it, but what would people want to do with a PC? Why would people want a PC, their own smartphone? Why would they want to pay on the internet? Why would they want to have a mobile app? Why would they want to be able to both chat and watch movies on their app? Everybody said those things before. We're saying that about blockchain. Why not blockchain? And let's find out what you can do with the blockchain. And so that's one of the, you talked about taglines, blockchain everywhere. The other part of it is, what will you do with your blockchain? If you can build your own blockchain, what would you do? And right now, we don't even know. We've only opened it up to this small group of people who have a lot of money and are in cryptocurrency and are at enterprises. And let's open it up to everybody and find out what really happens.
And I agree with that. And with that, David, we're out of time. So once again, thanks for being on the show today. David Moss, CEO of Strongblock. And he's doing great things. We're looking at for a launch October 1st.
October 1st.
All right. Well, David, I'm going to keep staying very close to you to see what's going on. Any questions or comments, email us at info@svnupbiz, and we'll be right back.
The NTT Open Innovation Contest 10.0 is now open for submissions. Interested startups should definitely check this out. Your company could win up to $100,000 of funding and win a trip to Tokyo to get shepherded by NTT Data's ecosystem. Go to oi.nttdata.com or svn.biz for more information.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your host, Keith Koo.
Welcome to Silicon Valley Insider. I'm your host, Keith Koo. I am at the Blockchain Bridge San Francisco Conference, and I'm about to do a panel with David Nage, who is the principal at Arca, and also his own podcast show, BaseLayer, out of New York. Welcome, David.
Thank you.
So, David, it was a really interesting conversation that we both felt like we just had to get out there. We were talking about the state of blockchain as a technology and what it really needs to progress forward. And, of course, the conversation always starts off with, what about dApps?
Right. I think what we're seeing right now is that, as an ecosystem, we talk a lot about the substrate levels and layers of query, of storage, of search. And we don't necessarily today have an all-encompassing interoperable layer, an application that we can use. use, like a Facebook or like a Google search or like a Twitter, because it's still very singular and focused. We're trying to get all of those single layers of substrate correct and functional and performant. We're trying to get them scaled. We're trying to make sure that the governance works very well. And we're still really early in a lot of those processes to get those protocols working together. And interoperability, to me, you know, is a few years away, because you need to have the ability to get proof of work working with proof of stake, or delegate a proof of stake, or, you know, proof of history and some of the other different kind of consensus models that are out there. So while we're still kind of thinking about the future, we have to be very cognizant of what we are dealing with right now. And as an ecosystem, we get very excited about these singular projects. But for real user adoption, you know, Bob and Mary in, you know, Madison, Wisconsin, who are using Twitter or use Amazon.com every day, and that's what they're used to, they are not going to have that kind of an experience right now with a blockchain-powered kind of single-layer application or dApp. Also, what's happening, too, is that with single-layer dApps, you're very focused on just one chain.
Yep.
And those chains, especially Ethereum and Bitcoin, at layer one are still very slow. You know, transactions per second on Bitcoin are about 3. On Ethereum, you're sub 10. And so in this day and age, as I like to say, we're all speed junkies. We're on demand. We want our food there in 5 minutes. We want to be able to go on Netflix and watch that video right now. We don't want to wait. That's our society these days. And so the dApps that are out there are still really dependent on single layer, single protocol type of chains that are slow.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And what's funny is, I'll break it out into two things. I think for the casual listener, when we talk about blockchain, there's still some thought, some notion that it's Bitcoin, that's cryptocurrency, it might be Ethereum, arguably, but what it really is about a year ago, no, even a year and a half ago, I had Jerry Cuomo, who's considered the father of the IBM side of Hyperledger. Mm-hmm. And also, I was talking to Brock Pierce a few months back after the US mainnet launch, and everyone was talking about how we were only 18 months away from true interoperability and cross-chain, which I was a little bit skeptical about. Yeah. I think just what you talked about a couple minutes ago was really on point, that there's so many things that need to happen before you get to, I'll use analogies like when you turn on water,
yep,
it just flows. You don't think about the supply chain, yep, from the source down through everything and all the stuff that needs to come in place.
Yep.
That's where we're at with blockchain. We, yep, still need the ability to get from the source of the water and turn on the spigot for it to come out, and that's the transaction. That's the transaction speed.
Yeah, and I always think of that, and I've been saying this a lot lately, is that when you and I, we're obviously in the technocrat society where we understand these things at a higher level, but when people who are outside of that society, when they run a Google search, they're looking for the best recipe for brownies, whatever it may be. They don't understand that behind the scenes there's layers of processes that are happening at lightning speed to basically get that result to you immediately. And so there's this, I don't know if it's a lack of interest in knowing about that, but I think what happened is that when we ushered in the age of digital and mobile, I think people stopped caring about how things actually happen more, and they just wanted performance, they just wanted speed, and they really didn't care about all the kind of nuts and bolts that happen behind the scenes to actually get things to happen. And so to your point, in the future of blockchains, in the future of dApps, in the future of application layers, you have to have, say, a file storage program like a storage that uses proof of stake. You have to have a query. You have to have other different layers that might be using different types of consensus algorithms to be able to get to their actual performance, working together harmoniously and making sure that all those validators are actually getting incentivized the way they're supposed to be getting incentivized. And so all of that, especially with on-chain governance, all of it has to work together in light speed. It has to work so fast, because when that person or persons does that search, or when they're trying to do that application, they're trying to use that application, if it's slow compared to what they're used to on the centralized kind of world, they're not going to use it anymore.
Exactly. And so coming out of banking and corporate, I'm going to use a corporate term for what you just described. The point where you said people just expect things to happen, we say auto magic.
Right.
And then in terms of actual transaction speed, when you pull out your Visa or your MasterCard, that's 24,000 transactions,
right,
per second.
Right. I think what we need to do with that is we need to address kind of a fair benchmark to that. So Bitcoin is a transactional chain, and so that is kind of what we think of as it relates to money, as it relates to transferring kind of assets and money. So that, compared to like the Visa comparison, is a little better. With Ethereum and other chains, those are computational.
Mm-hmm.
Those are actually Ethereum and Near and Agoric and some of the other smart contract platforms are really there to build the Web3 of the future. So using Visa as a benchmark for that is not really fair, in my opinion. Computational transactions per second don't need to be at 24,000 per second. However, obviously, if you're trying to use the Bitcoin rail to do payments, if you're trying to send wires, yes, obviously having six confirms is important from a security standpoint, but you need to have it faster. It's a better transition.
Well, the hope of EOS was supposed to be that, kind of averaging at 4,000, but there's a whole different set of slew of issues around that.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues, that one. Yeah, we won't have to go into that one.
Well, David, I really thank you for the few minutes we got today. I look forward to hearing more from you on the show.
Thanks.
And once again, Keith Q, Silicon Valley Insider at Blockchain Bridge SF. Any questions or comments, email us at info@svn.biz, and you can find this segment on either our show or Baselayer with David Nage of Arca.
And we'll see you next week. The NTT Open Innovation Contest 10.0 is now open for submissions. Interested startups should definitely check this out. Your company could win up to $100,000 of funding and win a trip to Tokyo to get shepherded by NTT Data's ecosystem. Go to oi.nttdata.com or svn.biz for more information.
You've been listening to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo. For questions or comments on today's program, or to schedule a complimentary consultation with Keith about your business, call 1-888-828-SVIN. That's 1-888-828-7846. 888-828-SVIN.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.